And so I thought it would be appropriate, you know, one of the reasons I like Blue Hat is I get to start off thinking about, hey, what's the past year looked like? I mean, it was, I think, 10 months ago where we were last in this room talking about these topics. And it's a good opportunity for me, from a response perspective, to kind of think through what the past year looks like. Because when you think about it, all the various pieces of security work that we do as a company at Microsoft, all the security work that we talk about and all the security experts that we work with from across the community, many of which are joining us here today, in some ways ends up at a final point landing in our lap in MSRC. Because it's the results of the security development that keep us from being busy. It's the results of the security operations that keep us from being busy. And it's when we detect or when we have got gaps in those processes that end up making us busy. And so we get to see a lot of that. So I was thinking back over this past year and some of the different things that we've seen. And one of the big trends that we've seen over and over again is attacks on retail more and more data breaches happening that are really high publicity, high volume. And it's not just limited to retail. You've got banking, and then you've just got credentials theft. And so more and more, security continues to become a large business. And this is a trend that we talked about a year ago, and it isn't new, but the interesting part for me is that it continues to grow, and that we continue to struggle with these types of challenges. And even some of the most secure firms that I've worked with are struggling with these problems. And it's not just limited to firms. One of the things that I found really interesting watching over this past year is how open source, which honestly we're using in increasing amounts here at Microsoft, has been under attack. And how what has stood in cases for years and decades is now becoming something that, as a security trend, people are looking at. They're hunting for vulnerabilities. They're finding vulnerabilities. You know, Heartbleed got a lot of press. So did round two of those vulnerabilities and round three of those vulnerabilities. Less press, but still a lot of attention and, quite frankly, a lot of work for our operations folks and for places where we integrated OpenSSL into our products. And this is true for Microsoft, but it's true across the whole ecosystem. And then Microsoft also made some steps in the past few years, over the past year. One of the graphics didn't show. I ran out of room on this slide, so I was trying to cherry pick a few. But whether it be, you know, Azure, continuing to make huge strides in security and getting certified. Honestly, as I work with Azure, they're raising the bar up above and beyond anything that that any regulatory system really tends to require. Whether it be Office 365 doing the same for their customers, whether it be things like the online bug bounty that Travis and company and Office 365 helped shepherd for the company, working with us in MSRC. Things like Interflow, other bug bounties, financial crime, and then the big graphic that's missing is the all the different things that IE's done over the past year to help fight use after free and other security issues. One of the trends that I've been glad to see fade away over the past year has been ransomware. If you recall last winter, ransoms were really big. We had a number of different customers being affected by this kind of malware. I'm glad to see that it's gone its way again, but I think it's a trend that's going to come back. Beyond the headlines, beyond the things that I see when I open up the newspaper, there's some metrics that we've been tracking and watching internally. This slide and the next one are from the Microsoft Security Intelligence Report. Feel free to read it. It's actually a pretty good read. It's one of those things that I use to understand what's going on from my perspective in security and from a response perspective and how I talk to customers as well. And it looks at them in three different time periods. The vulnerabilities that are exploited as 0 days. So before we've got a fix, heck, before we even knew about them. That's the red section at the bottom. The second one is what I call the fast followers. It's the vulnerabilities where we patched it, somebody took a quick look at the vulnerability we patched, developed an exploit,
and bang, came out with it in the first 30 days. And the third category is vulnerabilities that people have developed exploits for more than 30 days after we've exploited, after we patched them, when most customers have already patched. And I find the trend from 2010 through 2013 really interesting. One, I think we can call, not for complete success, knock on wood, but I think we can say that we've done a really good job as a company addressing vulnerabilities within the first 30 days. So can we patch the vulnerability before people start attacking it? By and large, I think we're able to. I think there's a couple things that have led to that. Longer conversation. Some of them are the MAP program. Some of it is just the way we've got auto update turned on for most of our customers. And so the platform's more secure about that. The way that Windows is patching, the way that IE is patching, the way that Office is patching, the way that the customers are able to pick that up means that attackers are disincentivized from going after that small time period. But the part that really bugs me is that section in the red at the bottom. Last year, we patched 391 vulnerabilities, CVEs, before anybody was ever affected by them. In a lot of ways, I call that a success. The fact that we have to go back and patch them, great. The security world moves on, technology moves on, that's fine. The fact that we got 391 security CVEs fixed before customers, before anybody had written an exploit for it, massive success. Those are things that don't impact our customers. The 13 in 2013, where they were 0 days, really get my goat. Because for these, it's all about APT. I mean, every single one of these, it's a sophisticated attacker. It's somebody who's targeting a very few set of people, and it's causing our customers intense pain, especially some of the customers that we rely on the most, our power sector, our financial sector. Those are the folks that are getting hit by those things. So a big challenge that we've got. And as you can see over the past decade, it's remained relatively the same. It's somewhere between 10 and 15 of them a year. On the other hand, one of the other ways that I look at success is, if you think about it, you can talk about the number of CVEs we patched, you can talk about the number of vulnerabilities we fixed in our services, but really, I think the biggest test, at least for the Windows platform, that shows how are we doing in terms of secure development and how are we doing in terms of secure operations, is how many of our customers are infected with malware. Because when you think about it, you've got the exploit chain, you've got the vulnerabilities, you've got the privilege escalation, but ultimately it's about getting malware on the box, in one sense. When you look at our different platforms from XP through 8.1, this is a snapshot taken in late 2013, these are all normalized counts. So this is in counts per million, per thousand scanned. Computers cleaned per thousand scanned. What you can see is that XP, and it had been falling off, wasn't doing too badly relative to Vista. But in Q3 and in Q4, in both cases, there's a significant downward trend that to me says the things that we're doing in secure development, the features that we're adding in our products, the security protections we're putting in place are working, because our customers are less likely to be infected when they're using the newer platforms than the older platforms. And that's true for our end user systems as well as our servers. So I think there's some good news there. I think there's good news for us in terms of the fact that our work is paying off, our features are paying off, and our practices are paying off. So when I look over at the past year, there's been a bunch of really challenging and interesting news events, a lot of really high profile hacks, a large set of companies that you'd think would never have been attacked or never have been compromised are getting compromised. People are losing their usernames and passwords in larger than ever numbers, 1.2 billion. And the clicker doesn't work. But those aren't the only things that are going on for us. In the security community, I've been having a bunch of conversations with actually many of you in the room, and many others outside. And when I think about what we've been talking about, it breaks out into a couple different categories. First, there's the deep technical conversations on what's going on in the security world and the vulnerability world. I know we feel it. I know the IE team feels it. I know OSG feels it. And we've certainly heard about it last year in the press about vulnerabilities in Internet Explorer. Use after free is the magic word for browsers. Use after free vulnerabilities are eating them alive. Some of the stats on the right-hand side, I think it's in the past 2 days, Google released a new update. They fixed 159 flaws in Chrome. That dwarfs our patch experience earlier this spring when we fixed 59, which I thought was going to be an all-time high that stood for a long time. Google had to beat us in vulnerabilities. I don't know if that's a good or a bad thing. I'm glad that they fixed them before hopefully they were being exploited, at least for the users. But use after free is dominating a lot of our conversation. We've seen them not only in IE. A year ago, we saw them in kernel. And so security vulnerability researchers are getting better. As we patch the types of vulnerabilities that have been that we found in the past, they're finding new classes. And quite frankly, use after free is a really tough problem. Hard to solve static analysis, easy to find with a fuzzer, but it's hard to just fuzz your way out of a security vulnerability and get complete coverage. The other trend that I've seen is that at, I think every security conference for the past year, every is probably an exaggeration, but everyone that I've been to, and a lot of the ones that I watch, there's a conversation about UEFI and device security. People are not just focusing on the same platforms, they're continuing to get low level, and they're trying to dive deeper. And then at the same time, there's all these conversations about service vulnerabilities and exploits, how to do web-based exploitation. One of the big challenges that I think we're going to face in the next 5 years is as more and more content moves into your web browser experience, and I talk about sandboxing a little bit later, you know, other companies in the browser market are putting a ton of technology and effort into sandboxing. How do you keep people in the browser environment and unable to get back to the operating system? It's an interesting idea. It helps protect against the attacks today. But when everything's in the browser, when all your data is in the cloud, when it's Office 365 that I'm using in my browser in order to get to data, how does keeping me in a sandbox actually protect me? If you're able to exploit my browser, you're able to get to that data. And that's really the stuff that I'm protecting to begin with. And so it's interesting to see the diving deeper and the diving higher into the cloud. Post-exploitations become big business. You can read this in a couple different ways. I heard yesterday a comment that some of the speakers that are talking about post-exploitation, you'll hear them later on, I want to say today, but don't quote me on that, that they were saying they don't even get asked how they get access to the system anymore. People just assume that they can get access. And I think that's true to a degree. But I also think that the conversation about the problems changed. We've spent a lot of time focusing on how you protect against exploitation. The conversation that we need to be having is, all right, after a system's compromised, what then? What happens to the network? What happens to the domain? How do people persist? How do they gain bigger access across the network? And there's more and more talks about this, whether they be about PowerShell, Mimikatz, Golden Ticket, Silver Ticket, whatever the set of technologies are, as they move forward, as people look at post-exploitation, past the hash, and so forth, we need to think more and more about how we help enterprises protect themselves. So a lot of conversations I mentioned earlier about sandboxing and then botnets, they never really go away. They're not hot topics anymore in many cases, but they never really go away. When I talk to network defenders, my conversations are different. Threat intelligence is the number one thing I hear people talking about. Sometimes I think it's like magic fairy dust that you just sprinkle on a problem. What's wrong with your security today? Oh, I just need some threat intelligence. Okay, solves the problem. The conversation that we're having in that space is more about action. It's great to have threat intelligence. It's great to share it. How do you act? Privacy and security together continue to get intermingled, no surprise. Credential theft is really the world of the future, and that leads into what some folks are calling vulnerability-free exploitation. What's that? You don't need a technical vulnerability. If you spearfish enough people, you're going to get somebody who'll double-click on that exe. You'll get somebody who gives you your username and password. And guess what? Between VPNs, OWA, remote access, I can figure out how to use those credentials to get in. And so it's not just about the technical vulnerabilities. It's about the credentials. It's about legitimate access, or things that look like legitimate access that aren't. Big data is huge. Everybody likes it. Business likes it. So does security. I think there's some really interesting projects that I've heard going on in a lot of the services, MSIT and in TWC's NetSec, on using Cosmos and big data environments to find some really sophisticated attackers. Good stuff, really good stuff. There's some changes that we're doing in terms of our products to make that easier. Windows has been changing out some of the logging that they're doing. That gets really powerful when you start talking about the world of big data. Because that logging helped a handful of tech companies this spring find a sophisticated APT within their networks based on the changes to our command line logging. We went from just logging, hey, cmd.exe ran, to cmd.exe and all the different command line parameters ran. People were able to mine that to find sophisticated attackers. That's a big success in my book. And then the last question is on defending the cloud. So many of the enterprises, should I move to a cloud environment? Should we move to a cloud environment? What are the risks? What are the benefits? I alluded to this a bit earlier. We at Microsoft, we in the security community, quite frankly, have spent a ton of time focusing on protection. How do you protect your enterprise? Whenever we talk about a security problem, we're generally talking about protecting them against a vulnerability. The conversation we're not having as often as I think we should is in the detect space and then the respond space. And more I'm having these conversations not only within Microsoft, but within the enterprise. If you think about the post-exploitation question that I asked you about earlier, where is that, you know, how do you think about post-exploitation? At that point, if somebody's already on your system, you've blown past protect. We still need the ability for customers, for our networks, to detect that something's malicious is going on and respond. There's more steps here. Detect, contain, respond. You can break this down in a number of different ways. But at a high level, one of the challenges I think we're going to have over the next year is to think not just about protect, but to increasingly think about detect and respond. And that's whether you're building code for a service or whether you're building a code for an end user system. I know we talked about threat intelligence. There's been a set of interesting conversations I've had on threat intelligence. I think we've probably all heard this before. If Dennis is in the room, thank you for this picture. He took this one in Turkey, I want to say. I found it fascinating that the door is padlocked and yet you've got some cloth hinges. And we've all heard this before. Defender has to defend the entire attack surface. Attacker has to find one gap. And all we're trying to do is protect against all, and as defenders, what our job is to protect against all avenues in. And so we say that the attacker has an asymmetric advantage. I think that's an oversimplification. That's true on a one-on-one engagement. If the only thing you're trying to defend is your one system, is your one service, then yes, you have to defend everything, and your attacker only has to find one gap. But that's not the way we really operate. That's not the way we operate at Microsoft. And that's not the way we operate as a security community. I don't know if you guys have seen a ghillie suit. It's a big green suit people wear in the woods to avoid getting caught. Snipers use them. It's a really, they work really well. It's almost impossible to see somebody sitting in a field in a ghillie suit. However, in the middle of a city, kind of stick out like a sore thumb. The reason that I say that's not how we operate is because as a company, as a set of services, as a set of developers, or as a community. I communicate frequently with tech, across the tech community, across multiple governments, across multiple security vendors. We share information. And attackers have this really challenging problem. They opt to operate in campaigns. It is extremely rare that an attacker decides to put together the resources to attack one company, one network, one service, and one service alone. Generally, they reuse the same tools, the same infrastructure, the same operational patterns, the same capabilities in order to make that happen. And they have to do that in order to scale, in order to get their job done. And they have to rely on secrecy to avoid being detected. Because once you know you're there, they're there, defenders can kick them out. They have to be secret. And so attackers, when you think at a campaign level, when you think across even the multiple services within Microsoft, Office 365, Azure, Skype, et cetera, Yammer, right, you can go on. The attacker's success depends on being able to stay secret and not having the defenders talk. Because once one defender, the attacker has to remain secret everywhere. If the attackers, or when the when the defenders communicate, once one defender finds one gap in one place and one piece of information about that attacker, and they're able to start unraveling that attacker's set of capabilities, infrastructure, et cetera, and share that information to act, that attacker is now at the asymmetric disadvantage. The defenders have an advantage. The defenders, as a set of defenders, only need to find one gap in the attacker's secrecy in order to take that attacker out. That's why threat intel is so powerful, and that's why we're spending so much time as a defenders community talking about how we exchange information and talking about how we improve detection, because that leads to better protection. And so, as I've been having these conversations, and I've kind of led into it, I've been thinking about, all right, what's next for us in this next year? Because, look, Blue Hat's a snapshot in time. Things don't start and stop on Blue Hat, even though I do take the time to stand back and look. And so what I've led into doesn't really talk about some significant changes, but continued evolution in this space. The first is, as we pick up more open source within the company, and as we continue to use services that have open source, we're going to have to think about how to handle that challenge. But the second thing is, if we needed a reminder that the past, more than a decade, almost two decades now, of work in doing secure development and secure operations, and that that's an important thing to do, we got it. Because software that's not built with security baked in ends up having huge vulnerabilities. And when people start looking, it really starts falling over. And so there's no replacement for continuing to put our time and effort into these efforts, into keeping our software and our services secure. Keeps me less busy too. But also, how we respond to vulnerabilities is critical. One of the other things that you saw in both Heartbleed and Shellshock is no real coordinated response across the community. And those of us that were involved know how painful that is. We're forced to respond as quickly and as possible. And it turns what is a crisis management problem into an emergency. Crisis is different than an emergency in my book. A crisis, when you got a critical problem, you try to move as quickly as possible. An emergency is just when you're all hands on deck because you're scrambling. Both of these turned into emergencies across many, many, many enterprises. We need to do a better job of working across the community in order to manage how we respond to vulnerabilities. But it's also critically important that we in Microsoft continue to focus on being able to respond quickly to vulnerabilities and speeding up our processes and efficiencies so that we're not stuck along with everybody else getting behind. Now, I ought to say that in both these cases, I was darn impressed. I think we were some of the first people out the door with everything up and patched, and we knew what was going on. We need to continue to drive in those areas. There's some places where we could have known better, we could have known sooner, we could have known faster. But I think the security muscle we built as a company's paid off really well. The second thing goes back to that protect, detect, respond that we talked about. We need to think beyond exploitation. It's not about just that first access to the box. It's about that threat intelligence. It's about that cooperative defense. It's about automated machine speed sharing of information and the ability to act on that. We need to recognize that it's not just about the vulnerabilities. Credentials are eating a lot of our customers alive. We need to think about our services as defense networks, because that's what they are in some ways. When we've got multiple customers together, we can do stuff that nobody else can. I hear from some of our services about cases where there are customers that are being impacted, and they've got one customer that's under attack by a specific sophisticated adversary, and they go, hey, Office 365, help me out. Office 365 goes in and they find that, and they use those same indicators to protect tens of other customers, because it's all happening in one bubble, and they're able to share that information on with other services, and other services are able to get into the game of protecting them. Our services are a defense network. We can use them that way. And the last thought is, we talk about cloud first, mobile first. I think that's really true. We talk about services, devices, and software. But increasingly, it's not about services, devices, or software. It's really about services, devices, and software. My Surface, my phone. If I didn't use the services behind them, they wouldn't be half as valuable as they are. And so it's not about a device, it's not about a service, and it's not about software. It's about all three operating together, and all three operating together to get that better defense. And so I think we've got a lot of promise in terms of where we're headed. I think we've got some huge challenges over the next year. But if we're able to think beyond just exploitation, beyond protect, detect, respond, and we're able to think about how we use all of the services and all of the tools we have at our disposal, we've got a huge ability to have impact. Thanks. Enjoy the rest of Blue Hat. And I'll take any questions off on the side, because I want to get us back on schedule. So thanks, guys.